All right. Good morning. I call the House Education Finance Committee to order. We have a quorum, so I think we'll go right into the minutes. Representative Purcell, have you had a chance to peruse the minutes?
I have, Madam Chair. I moved the minutes from Thursday, March 2nd. Nope, from February 28th.
Perfect. Thank you. Representative Purcell moves the minutes for February 28th. Are there any questions on the minutes? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say no. The minutes for February 28th are adopted. And we will go right into our first bill on the calendar for the day, and that's House File 362. Representative Reedman. Oh, Representative Moeller. I had the wrong paper motion. Oh, that's what it is. Sorry. Representative Moeller, welcome to the Education Finance Committee. Representative Ring, would you like to move this bill before us? With the Representative Ring, would you like to move House File 362 before us with the possible intention for the intention of possibly laying it over for an education finance bill? Representative Ring. Sorry.
Yes. I would.
Thank you. That Representative Reed moves the bill before us, so House File 362 is before the committee today. Representative Moeller, go ahead and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. So, members, House File 362 is a bill that many of you have heard before in past sessions. It creates a lead position at MDE to assist school districts in developing evidence-based response to student mental health. It includes a lead position to address teacher and staff mental health. When I started working on this bill in 2018, student mental health was in a state of crisis. And even before the pandemic, every educator I talked to said students were experiencing growing mental health needs and that those needs were not being met. Students have also been telling us that this is a problem. And just recently, the CDC came out with their youth risk behavior survey results from 2021. And they said that nearly all indicators of poor mental health and suicidal thoughts and behaviors increased from 2011 to 2021. The percentage of students who experienced persistent feelings of sadness or hopelessness, seriously considered attempting suicide, made a suicide plan, and attempted suicide increased. The statistics are alarming. In addition, there is a growing and urgent need to assist our teachers and staff with their mental health needs. When they are working with students who have experienced trauma, it impacts them. Essentially, these two positions at MDE will create a clearinghouse for districts, teachers, staff, students, and their families on mental health. It does not require the school districts to do anything, but rather these leads will gather and share evidence-based strategies with districts to address the mental health needs of students, teachers, and staff. There's no more reinventing the wheel that will take place. And it'll really be a menu of options for school districts to look at and determine what best suits their needs. I want to thank MDE for their assistance, and you'll see letters of support in your packet from NAMI, school social workers, Minnesota American Academy of Pediatrics, the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention, and also we have the support from EdMin. And I do have two testifiers who are here remotely, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Moeller. We'll go to the testifiers. First up is Amy Jones. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you very much. I apologize for my croaky voice, but I'm going to give this a go. Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Amy Jones, and I'm an educational consultant and the chair of the State Mental Health and Schools Work Group. I live in Shoreview. I'm a 30-year licensed classroom teacher and have worked in education at all levels, including as an elected school board member in the Mountview District, an administrator in Minneapolis and Stillwater, an instructional coach, classroom teacher, and adjunct professor at the university level. I'm an appointed member of the Minnesota State Advisory on Mental Health, and I'm also a certified mental health first aid facilitator for youth and adults. I've been working with Representative Moeller for the last few years to add a position for comprehensive mental health lead for students at MDE. We are one of a very few states that doesn't have such a position, and we need it now more than ever. During our recent discussions with stakeholders, state agencies, and education organizations, everyone agreed that we also need to add a lead position to support and coordinate improved mental health for school staff and teachers as well. Minnesota would be one of the first states to fund a position to lead, coordinate, and support teacher and school mental health at a Department of Education. We acknowledge and appreciate all the work around mental health that is happening at MDE. There are grant-funded positions and programming that is supportive and effective, but all of these grants end. And we know that our school's mental health challenges will not be ending anytime soon. We need a position with stable long-term funding to lead and coordinate all of the mental health work. Our stakeholders need a point person, someone specific to contact, someone who can coordinate and disseminate the best resources, trainings, and practices for the benefit of every student, teacher, and school staff member. Someone who can communicate with stakeholders and seek out promising practices that can be shared and scaled up across the state. In addition, as we move toward adding mental health staff in buildings, this person could support the site-based positions to have access to best practices, resources, training, and programs with proven results that can be shared across the state. This would allow these site-based mental health positions to provide impactful support more quickly and efficiently. Representative Mueller and I have been working to provide additional mental health support in Minnesota schools after seeing a growing and timely need. House File 362 would put Minnesota in line with other states that have mental health in schools lead for students in the Department of Ed. This position would not be tied to overseeing a grant. Rather, it would provide a much needed contact person to address the many challenges and opportunities currently facing our students' mental health. Over time, we've updated this bill to add the position for school staff and teachers. This is also a non-grant funded position at the Department of Ed to lead, coordinate, support school staff and teacher mental health. More than ever before, we see our school staff and teachers struggling with their own mental health and the increasing challenge to support the mental health of their students. In the midst of the fourth school year impacted by the repercussions of the pandemic, we have many qualified, passionate, exceptional school staff and teachers leaving the profession. Not only is this a workforce crisis, but the stability of our educational system will be greatly impacted if we continue to hemorrhage these talented and dedicated school staff and teachers. Our state deserves positions to oversee and coordinate this work so that our students and school staff and teachers have the support they need to stay in our schools to be effective and successful. These positions are long overdue, and if the pandemic has shown us anything, it has illuminated this glaring and growing need to improve mental health in our schools. Our students, school staff, and teachers deserve the support. I thank you for your time and hope for your support of House File 362.
Thank you so much for your testimony. Next up, we have L11. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Hi, my name is Al Levin. Just want to make sure everybody can hear me all right.
Yes, we can. And sorry for mispronouncing your name. Go ahead.
No problem at all. Good morning, Chair and members of the committee. Thank you for letting me testify today. My name is Al Levin, and I'm an assistant principal in St. Paul Public Schools. I've been in the district since February of 1999 and have been in an administrative role approximately 18 years. I'm a governor-appointed member of the Minnesota State Advisory Council on Mental Health. I serve on the State Suicide Prevention Task Force, and I'm a passionate mental health advocate. I've been advocating for better systems of supports for our educators since well before the pandemic. Many of our students are going in and out of complex trauma on a daily basis. These traumas often manifest through our students' behaviors throughout the school day, and they have implications and consequences on the mental health of our staff. These challenges have only been exacerbated by the pandemic. Dealing with the behaviors and supporting our students through their challenging situations oftentimes creates trauma, known as vicarious trauma, secondary trauma, or compassion trauma for our educators. While tending to the mental health needs and the challenges of the classrooms, many of our educators continue to have trauma of their own due to the pandemic and other societal issues. The race issues and violence impact our educators daily. The reality of gun violence, guns, and other weapons within the walls of our schools is on the minds of our educators, and justifiably so. Just 6 weeks ago, an assistant principal in St. Paul was shot in the ear while breaking up a fight on the school grounds, and I would imagine that you are all well aware that the first murder in the city of St. Paul was on the hallway floor of a St. Paul high school only a few weeks ago. I cannot imagine the trauma that is being endured by the students and staff, as well as the family members from that school. We have a teacher shortage, a substitute shortage, and a paraprofessional shortage. Our teachers are pulled to substitute in other classrooms during their prep times, leaving no time throughout the day to prepare for their lessons or to grade work, let alone time to process some of the traumatic situations that occur in their classrooms or the tragic stories they hear from their students. It is not unusual to have an educator in my office in tears wondering if they'll be able to finish the week or even the day without more support for their students or for their own mental health. I know of educators who have walked out during the school day due to stress. I know of educators who have had to deal with a suicidal student and after calling for support are asked to continue with their lesson. No processing, no additional support. I think it's fair to say that the situation is dire. Many seasoned educators are stating that these past few years have been the most challenging of their career. Educators are leaving the profession at an alarming rate. Just over a year ago, Education Minnesota stated the teachers union can't remember a time when so many teachers left their jobs during the year and we're not even into December yet. A non-grant funded position at MDE would focus on the mental health of our educators is imperative to public education. While there's a great deal of talk and work towards supporting our students, it's time that we focus on the mental health of our educators as well. I urge you to support this bill. Our educators need it. Public education is relying on it. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Levin. Representative Moeller, we're going to go to the table for questions real quick or comments. Representative Altdorf.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Moeller. I appreciate you addressing the mental health crisis. You know, in Minnesota, I think we're well aware there truly is a huge problem in our schools and also with teachers. We need to support the mental health. I agree with that 100%. What I'm not sure that I agree with this bill is doing what we want it to do. And so from the testifier we just heard, that they have a shortage of teachers, they have a shortage of paraprofessionals, they're hurting at the school level, they're hurting locally. And what your bill is doing is adding, it's like the big government picture. What your bill is doing is adding to the big government, it's not helping down at the bottom where the teachers and the students drastically need these funds. Right now, if you could tell me, there's not a fiscal note. So my question is, how much money are you estimating? I understand there's not a fiscal note, but how much money are you allocating or do you think would be estimated to be putting towards your bill?
Representative Moeller.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. And before I get to the fiscal note, I just want to address your comments too. This isn't an either or situation. Like, we need more school mental health supports in our schools. There's no question about that. But let me just give you an example of why I brought this bill. When I was running for office, my son's good friend, juniors in high school, died by suicide. Our school had no idea how to react to that suicide. And there are things that you can do that are actually very harmful in that situation for other students. And so they were desperate for information. My testifier, Ms. Jones, was on the school board at the time, was the chair, and she was desperate for information on how to best respond to this, not only in that particular crisis, but then looking at student mental health in general. So every school district is left with trying to create the wheel themselves. So this position, like I said, is more tools in the toolbox for school districts to use. And when we first started working on this, we were the only state that didn't have a state level position like that. So I just want to be very clear about the need for this. And then as we worked on it, as you heard from Mr. Levin, the need for this same thing for teachers and staff was apparent as well. With respect to the fiscal note, it has been requested this year. We don't have it back. We did have a note prepared in other years, so I don't know how that's going to change or not change. It was, it was about $169,000 per year, I believe, but I could be wrong because we've amended it a couple times as well.
Representative Moeller, Ms. Beckel can actually speak to the fiscal note from previous years.
Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Solveig Beckel, House Fiscal. Yes, the fiscal note from the last session had the costs for each mental health lead at approximately $150,000 per year. MDE estimated that they would be able to hire one partial year, so they did estimate 0.75 FTE for 1 year, and then the full FTEs the following years, and that was on a very, very similar version of the bill. The governor also has a carve-out in one of his provisions for a mental health lead that the governor costed out at $150,000 per year.
Thank you. Representative Altendorf, did you have a
follow-up? Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Ms. Beckel, and thank you, Representative Mueller. We are on the same page, 100%. We are literally on the same page that this is a place that we have to focus on. I am with you. I just want to let you know I am with you 100%. Where we divide is the strategy. And when I am looking at an organization like MDE with over 400 paid employees, I am a business owner. We are supposed to be managing the state of Minnesota like a business. All of us, everyone in this room, we should be managing our state like a business. And when we are in a crunch time and a crisis time in Minnesota, I truly believe MDE should find the resources and the people and the staff to do this without this legislation body mandating it. If this was a priority to MDE, which this absolutely should be, this would have been done. This should have been done. And it should not take this legislative body to do it.
Thank you, Representative Altendorf. Representative Mueller.
Yeah, thank you. Well, MDE is doing great work in this space already. And the issue is the needs are growing. And so the needs are growing. We don't want to take away the good work they're doing in this space already. I'll also say, as my testifiers mentioned a couple times, that the positions there, many of them are grant-funded positions, and they're federal grants, and they have specific requirements that they have to follow. And so that's another reason why it would be difficult to take some of those positions and put them into this these two lead positions.
Thank you. Representative Edelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Mueller, for this bill. It's been, how many times have you presented this bill?
I'm just Representative Mullen. Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Edelson, I have lost count. It's been a few.
Representative Edelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think it's like three or four, because I've always been supportive. I'm supportive this year. I'm a co-author, and I'm proud to be, because I think that if you zoom in, you see the day-to-day needs of the struggle of what's happening in a school. And then if you zoom out, you have to look at best practices in mental health for the state. And as a clinician, I can tell you, those get complicated and they change. And so we need this. First of all, the state of Minnesota is not a business. We're not a business. If we are in the business of anything, it's in the business of taking care of the people of Minnesota. And so very supportive of your bill. You know, when we think about the school shooting that happened in St. Paul and what your testifier was talking about, that school needs support. And when we're talking about the levels of suicide that we're seeing, suicide ideation that we're seeing, depression, of the numbers that are just going up, our students need help and our districts need support. And so thank you for this bill. I hope this is the year that we bring it home, and I think it will really be helpful for the state of Minnesota.
Thank you. Representative Green.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Mueller, for bringing this bill forward. I think, you know, when we're looking at a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to improve our schools, and when we look back on this year or this biennium, I think we're going to be really proud of passing bills like this, because this is where our focus should be, and this is where our resources should be directed. And in terms of, you know, us legislating, you know, us here making decisions about what's happening in our schools, you know, I look at NAMI supporting this, you know, people who are on the ground, who are interacting with our students and our teachers, who see the need. It's not coming from above, it's coming from the ground. You know, we're looking at the Minnesota chapter of American Academy of Pediatrics are in support of this. The Minnesota School of Social Workers Association is supporting this. So it's not like we're creating something out of nothing. You know, I mean, we need to listen to the people who are in the schools, and they're speaking out and they're saying they need this. So I think it's a great bill, and I fully support it. Thank you so much for bringing it forward.
Thank you. Representative Prasega.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I want to say thanks, Representative Mueller. This is amazing. This is one of the biggest, I can't even say ask, but cries, especially coming from my district and on both sides of the two districts that I represent. We are hurting. I'm hearing from mothers, I'm hearing from fathers, guardians, but most specifically, I'm hearing those cries from our youth. I'm hearing these children who say, we don't know what else to do. We don't know what else to do to try to even tell our own friends how they're coping because we don't know how we're coping with. These are the words that are coming out from my students that I work with, the youth that are emailing me every day, that there needs to be these social services to help their mental capacity. I just came out of a room, and I apologize for being late, but I've been studying this because this is a huge impact that is going to happen, not just in my district, but those are the cries of the state's youth and the families. And most importantly as well, we can't forget about the teachers. The teachers are taking on so much work because we care about our kids, but we need these services to be provided by those who know how to provide these services. We'll see the outcome. What we're seeing is the lack of this, and we're seeing the cause and effect of not having. I want to see the cause and effect of by having services for mental health in our kids. I know is going to blossom and bloom what is being asked in cries for help. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Mueller, I just want to interject and say thank you as well. When you started bringing this bill forward, we had had a similar incident happen in one of our junior highs. In fact, it was three students within a school year. And the district was really struggling and to find those resources and find somebody that they could help coordinate that. And I think sometimes our districts need that economies of scale that we can provide at the state to provide those best practices, those expertise, because they might be a district in our cities that have just experienced this, in greater Minnesota that's just experienced this, and they might not have a social worker or a counselor. And they might have a principal with a few hundred students that's struggling to figure out what to do next, and they would have some place to go to call for help. So just want to thank you for that. And then any final words? Oh, thank sorry, Representative Kreshaw. I clearly don't turn my head to the right.
It's okay. Thank you. Thank you, Chair. And thank you, Representative Mueller. I appreciate you bringing the bill forward. And in this, Representative Mueller, we continue to elevate the conversation, which is very important. Just a couple of questions as we look at this, and I'm just for my own clarification. So I heard a couple folks mention in line with other states. Why is that important? What is that one of our goals, is lining up with other states, or is there best practices we're missing?
Representative Holland.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, I think there are best practices that we're missing by not having a comprehensive position like this. I could turn it over to my testifier, Amy Jones, because I know she's looked at a lot of other states and what they've been doing and how they have a position like this, but absolutely, it is needed.
We have like maybe 1 minute, Ms. Jones, if you want to just
prepare. And I don't need, respond. That's fine. I'm just asking general questions, so
okay.
You don't necessarily need to bring the testifier back up, that's fine.
Representative Kreshaw, follow up?
Just two other quick ones. Do you know how many open positions MDEE has right now? Do they even have the capacity to hire for this?
Representative Mueller, I don't know if you would, as the chair of the Public Safety Committee, would you have that information?
I don't, Madam Chair. I don't know how many open positions they have, but they have certainly helped us with the language of this bill, and nobody has ever flagged for me that they would not be able to hire for these particular two positions.
Okay.
Representative Kreshaw?
And then the last one, I won't make this a question because I know we're going to run out of time. So, I mean, my concerns are I think MDE does have a number of open positions. We have open positions across the state in lots of things, so there's a people issue that I worry about. And I, you know, unless I'm mistaken, I've yet to see the commissioner or schools mention this specific solution as a priority. They certainly talk about other mental health issues and other mental health solutions. So perhaps looking across the spectrum at those priorities before this might make sense, but I do appreciate you elevating the issue, and I continue to see value in talking about it. So thank you for that, Representative Mueller.
Representative Mueller.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. And I do believe AMSD has indicated their support on this. We've been working with them, running the language by them over the years. We've had a number of past supporters in other years as well. We just didn't gather all, again, this bill's been heard so many times that we didn't necessarily gather them all up again. But I have not heard that any school districts are not supportive of this.
Thank you, Representative Mueller. I love getting things on the record when I see nods in the room. Mr. Kuhnquist, did you want to come and speak on the record, please? Sorry to put you on the spot, but when I see nods, I get excited and love to show that we are collaborative and working together. Please state your name for the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. My name is Scott Kuhnquist with the Association of Metropolitan School District. And yes, we have been in contact with Representative Mueller over the last several years on this legislation, as well as Ms. Jones, who testified earlier. And we are supportive of the proposal. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Kuhnquist. With that, I think Representative Mueller, final comments.
Yeah, I'll just want to say again, this is just one tool in the toolbox that's needed. And then also just say, anytime I talk about suicide, I just want to remind people of the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline. It's 988, or you can text MN to 741-741. And I thank you for the opportunity to once again present my bill, and look forward to your support as we hopefully get it across the finish line this year. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Mueller. Thank you for your testimony. Thank you for always adding that phone number. With that, members, we'll lay House File 362 over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Next up, we have House File 933, Representative Rehm. I'll let folks get settled here. Representative Rehm, welcome to your committee. Would you like to move House File 933 before the committee?
Yes, Madam Chair. I would like to move it.
Thank you, Representative Rehm. That House File 933 is before the committee. Go ahead, proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. I am here to bring forward House File 933, the Eastern Carver County Schools lease levy authorization for a transportation hub. And I have two testifiers here who can explain this bill probably much better than I can, but I will summarize briefly for you. So right now, under current law, a school district may levy the cost of a lease facility if it is for instructional purposes. Eastern Carver County Schools is requesting special authority to allow the district to access new space to update its pupil transportation hub. So Eastern Carver County Schools bought its current bus facility in 2001, and while our district has grown significantly since then, the space at this bus garage has gotten increasingly tight and is no longer equipped to properly house or service the fleet. So coupled with $5 million in repairs needed to maintain the current property, it has become increasingly clear that a new location is necessary. A new transportation center would allow for more maintenance space to reduce the time vehicles are out of service for repairs, provide better security for storage of the bus fleet, and create a much more desirable working environment for the district's school's bus drivers. So with me here, I have two testifiers. I have the superintendent of Eastern Carver County Schools and the director of finance and operations, and I would like to allow them to speak.
Thank you so much. We have Lisa Sales and Karen Devon. Why don't you go ahead, Superintendent Sales. State your name for the record and proceed.
Dr. Lisa Sales Adams.
Thank you, Dr. Sales. Go ahead.
Madam Chair, members of the Education Finance Committee, thank you for hearing this bill. As I shared, I am the superintendent of Eastern Carver County Schools, and with more than 9,000 schools, Eastern Carver County is one of the larger districts in the state of Minnesota and is projected to grow, along with the expected county growth as more rural land is sold in our area. The school district is 84.16 miles and serves the Southwest Metro cities of Carver, Chaska, Chanhassen, and Victoria. This is my third year as superintendent, and I recall when I first started how impressed I was with our facilities. I actually had a tour around the district, and I was amazed and in awe with the way that our facilities looked. But visiting the bus garage was a surprising exception. There is a stark contrast between the pride of our transportation staff and the work they do to safely get our students to and from school in the conditions they were working in. During my visit, this is what I observed. The parking lot in very poor condition with large potholes, inadequate drainage, and insufficient hard surface parking areas, forcing buses to park on grass and in the mud. Much of our fleet parks outside in uncovered spaces susceptible to weather impacts. Poor site security, lacking proper lighting, access control, and surveillance capabilities and perimeter security. Defective heating equipment that is no longer usable in multiple buildings. Repair bays that are small, dark, poorly ventilated, and ill-equipped for efficient repair, with the wash bay being used as a repair bay when needed. No dedicated snow storage space available, and as we know, this year we've had tons of snow. And in addition to that, our school bus driver waiting areas and restrooms are too small to meet employees' needs. Building codes are not being met, and the lack of amenities to support a positive work environment. Eastern Carver County Schools places a high priority on protecting our investments, and the current conditions of our transportation building continue to present a pervasive issue. This flexibility would allow us to move forward with a plan that is cost-efficient and beneficial to taxpayers, students and their families, and our hardworking staff.
Thank you, Dr. Salesdale. Sorry, I got your name wrong.
Oh, you're fine.
Next up, please state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you very much. My name is Karen DeVette, and I'm the Director of Finance and Operations for Eastern Carver County Schools. And Madam Chair, thank you for having us here this morning and members of the committee. Dr. Sales Adams has shared information about the facility inadequacies of our current transportation hub. And I'd just like to provide just a little bit more context about the scope of services and the investment that we need. We operate over 110 routes daily. We cover over 1.4 million miles in a school year. Our bus garage is located just to the edge of downtown Chaska with nearly 120 buses. Our current site of only 6.5 acres, Dr. Sales Adams has talked to this, includes 4,200 square feet of storage, which is about half the size of the facility need. As we also mentioned, we have to store buses outside, which decreases our life expectancy and causes us to have additional investments that increase our cost, both to the district and to our taxpayers, such as things like being able to convert our fleet to electric buses and having adequate electric plug-ins. You know, we have to keep our buses running outside to get them warmed up, so excessive fuel idling, and then, of course, labor cost associated with those things. So as we've mentioned, the site is too small to accommodate the growth that we expect to serve our students in Eastern Carver. I mentioned also that we're on the outskirts or the edge of downtown Chaska. This is a historic downtown residential area in a commercial district, and they are investing a lot right now to revitalize that area. This site, the current site the bus garage sits on, is a prime redevelopment site for that local community. As well, downtown Chaska really isn't located centrally within our district, which also increases our operational cost as we travel those 1.4 million miles. And all that aside, our current facility is also outside current zoning for where it sits, given the number of vehicles that we're storing outside. So with a new transportation facility, we envision a space that's large enough to store all of our buses indoors and reduce those costs associated with outdoor storage, certainly improve the work environment of our drivers, and correct the facility deficiencies that we've already mentioned. We're asking for approval to be able to utilize our lease levy outside of what it is currently set up for to build this transportation hub. We currently utilize only about 50% of our lease levy authority. And with this proposal, we're certainly mindful of that tax increase to our property holders in Eastern Carver County and want to make sure we limit that tax impact. We do have a bonding plan over the next 10 years that includes a step down in our debt service levy from almost 30% in 2022 to just over 20% by 26, which does allow ample room in our forecasted property tax rates to add this to the lease levy without significantly increasing property taxes for our community. If we were to go ahead, I think Representative Ree mentioned this, and fund the necessary capital renewal. We'd be putting another $5 million into a site that just doesn't is just so inadequate for our needs. We estimate the new facility will cost approximately $15 million to both acquire the land and build the facility. And we do intend to utilize a combination of pay-as-you-go, hopefully lease levy, and the existing assigned fund balance that we have to fully fund this project. I also wanted to mention that we did include the Transportation Center in a capital bond referendum that the district did in 2019, which unfortunately did not pass. However, we subsequently had a successful referendum in 21 for increasing our operating levy. However, that's not sufficient to meet our current needs and to replace this transportation building. We've also had discussion with other community leaders in the county about including an educational facility within the new transportation center and partnering with our municipalities in workforce development. That might include career technical education, like is small and large engine mechanics, as well as a commercial driver license training facilities. So again, we're asking for increased flexibility related to the building lease levy authority to the purchase and build this new transportation facility. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Members, we'll move to questions. Pryor, Representative Pryor.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I have a comment here, which is thank you for this excellent presentation. Also to Nonpartisan and everyone that put the packet together. This is kind of, it's a complicated issue why you have to come to the legislature to ask what you're asking for. But the background that you provided here and showing we just have a very small decision to make, which is to say yes and add it to our bill. And so I do want to congratulate all of you for the work that you've done to bring this forward to us in such a clear and concise way and to explain it so thoroughly. And, you know, we appreciate that. Well, we're sorry that you have to come and go through all this work to get something that's so necessary to your district. But it's our, you know, we're glad that we can listen and that we can pay attention to something as significant to your district as this. Thank you, Representative Ream, for bringing this forward and with your testifiers. And it's good to be able to do this kind of work.
Thank you, Representative Pryor. And I want to thank you, too, for being creative and thinking about that CTE stuff. That's a very, very something that we're very interested in this committee. So thank you for looking into that. Representative Kreisha.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And thank you for bringing this forward to the finance person. We should do this. We should take this off your back because you're going to have lots to unpack after everything gets passed this year.
Thank you, Representative Kreisha. With that, Representative Ream, final comments.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. So the wheels on the bus go round and round, round and round, round and round, but we need a place to park our buses. And, you know, as you can see, we have world-class schools. We have great representation here. We need a place for our buses. We need to make it better for the people who drive our buses and maintain our buses, and this makes financial sense. So I'm very appreciative of the fact that Dr. Lisa Sales-Adams and Karen Devitt came and testified. I think you can see the quality of education that our kids are getting just based on this testimony. And I look forward to seeing this bill pass. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Representative Raymond. With that, members, I'll renew the motion to lay over House File 933 for possible inclusion in an education finance bill. Next up, members, actually before that, Representative Greenman, you have an announcement.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. I just wanted to let you know that Minneapolis Public Schools citywide student government students are here, including two student representatives on the school board and a few from my district. So maybe if you guys just want to stand up so we can recognize you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
We always appreciate having students in the Education Finance Committee, but in all of our committees and making sure that your voices are heard as well. With that, we have next up House File 1102. Thank you, Representative Clardy. Welcome to your committee. Would you like to move House File 1102 before the committee?
Yes, so moved.
Thank you. With that, 1102 is before us. Go ahead and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, committee members, for allowing me the opportunity to present this. House File 1102 extends school counseling and mental health services to students enrolled in non-public schools, American Indian controlled contract, and grant schools. Under current law, students enrolled in non-public schools, American Indian control contract, or grant schools have access to school counseling and services grades 7 through 12. These services are provided to students with school counseling and mental health services, and they're provided. They also provide referral assistance as necessary. So we know the need for this, right? We do know the need for this. School counseling and mental health services are needed before students enter grade 7. We also know the importance of early intervention. This bill focuses on what's best for students and ensuring that all students get the services that they need to access critical services. I support this and ensuring that mental health services and counseling is available for all students in all of our schools, school district, intermediate schools, districts, and charter and public schools, non-public schools, tribal schools, and educational cooperatives is the goal of this bill. We know that our students have been enrolled in public schools and non-public schools, and for this legislation to ensure that all students receive this important services, that they receive this important services. We also know that a lot of students are enrolled in public schools for K-5, and then they end up enrolling in non-public schools or vice versa. And we want to make sure that that intervention is available. So there are several organizations that are supporting this legislation, including Mindependent, Minnesota Association of Independent Schools, the Minnesota Catholic Conference, and the Jewish Community Relations Council, and other partners listed on the one-page handout that you have. So I have two testifiers here, and I also have Tim Benz here as well for some of the technical information. So, Chair Joachim, did you want to call in a testifier?
Thank you. Thank you, Representative Clardy, and I'll just note that we have the remote testifiers today, and members, there is also a fiscal note in your packet. I should have noted that with the last bill. So the information is there. And with that, why don't we go to your first testifier, Jackie Smith. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Jackie Smith. I'm the Director of General Studies at the Heiliger Minneapolis Jewish Day School. I'm testifying today on behalf of the Minnesota Association of Independent Schools, also known as MAIS. Additionally, I have spent 23 years in public education as a licensed teacher, an instructional coach, and a licensed administrator, primarily in the K-8 setting. I'd like to thank Representative Clardy for bringing the House File 1102 forward. There may be a presumption that non-public schools have plenty of resources to provide counseling services to all students, but the truth is that some non-public schools don't have those resources. Mental health needs in all Minnesota schools, as we've agreed, are significant, and we need to strengthen the state school partnership to rise to this challenge. At Heiliger, we've seen a rise in anxiety and a number of other mental health issues. In fact, following the pandemic, the single largest need listed in all teacher student referrals are not for academic needs, but for our social, emotional, and other mental health issues. As a Jewish institution, it's especially stressful as local and national threats to the Jewish community continue. Some of our students have deep memories of a January 2017 credible bomb threat that led to the evacuation of our school and other communities in the Jewish Community Center. That impacts the social emotion, the emotional welfare of our students and families. Whether they're in seventh grade or first grade, they're impacting students at all levels, including our youngest learners. Expanding counseling services to provide strong support and early interventions is a benefit to everyone. Like a number of Mays schools, High Literature is a K-8 institution, which means the majority of our students graduate into nearby public schools for high school. It would be prudent and beneficial for all to invest in the healthy development of all of our children now and not to wait until they are in upper junior high or high school. By waiting to provide mental health options at a later age, not only will it require more expensive mental health assistance to the school district, but our kids could be more traumatized. By supporting HF 1102, you're supporting early intervention that will only strengthen the student resiliency and outcomes and our students' readiness to learn and grow. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Next up, we have Jessica Saxon in remote. So please state your name for the record and proceed.
My name is Jessica Saxon. Thank you, Madam Chair, committee members, and thank you, Representative Clarity, for bringing this bill forward. If passed, this bill would increase per pupil funding for counseling services in non-public schools at all levels, and so I'm speaking to that this morning. I've been a licensed public school counselor assigned to Marshall School, which is a non-public school in Duluth, for the past 5 years. During this time, I've built strong relationships with the students, teachers, and staff at Marshall. I greatly enjoy my work and believe that both the students and faculty have benefited from having my position filled by one consistent person over the last few years. As you know, public schools receive limited per pupil funding for their school counselors. Due to this limited funding, public school counselors who are assigned to independent schools like mine quickly become too expensive for the independent schools to retain as a result of the counselors' regular annual raises from their district employers. This means that the turnover for positions like mine tends to be high, and the counselors are often not able to build the kinds of lasting relationships with the students that would be most beneficial to their overall mental health and wellness. The only reason that I have been able to remain at Marshall as long as I have is that 5 years ago, I started a new career as a school counselor. And so as a new district hire, I began my work at the very bottom of the pay scale. But this is unusual. Most school counselors assigned to my position in recent times have not been new hires, and so have been in the middle of the salary range, and therefore have only been able to remain at Marshall for a couple of years before being reassigned to a district school, or else have had to drop down to part-time status, providing the students here with support on a part-time basis, which has not served to meet the students' needs. In the next year or two, my salary and benefits will outpace the allocation that Marshall receives for my position, and so I too will be reassigned while a less seasoned and therefore less expensive counselor takes my place. After a couple of years, that person's salary will also outstrip Marshall's allocation for the counseling position, and so that person will be replaced as well. I believe that this high turnover of publicly assigned school counselors is not in the best interest of the students, whose mental health needs, after all, are the same as their public school counterparts. Their mental health is best served by consistency and trust, which requires, in part, school counselors who have the opportunity to be there for them from 1 year to the next. Increased per-pupil funding for non-public schools would allow these publicly funded school counselors to keep their positions in independent schools and continue to build these relationships with students that are so critical to their success. Thank you for your time and for giving me the opportunity to speak to you today about this very important issue.
Thank you for your testimony and for your work. Next up, Carmen Grace Poppert, remote. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Hi, buenos dias, good morning. To Madam Chair and members of the committee, I'm humbled to speak to you today on this crucial topic. My name is Carmen Grace Poppert, and I'm the Director of Academics and Elementary School at Risen Christ Catholic School in South Minneapolis. I'm joining you today virtually from school. Risen Christ Catholic School serves as a community hub for our children and families. Whether it's educating our students, providing childcare and before school enrichment, parent education classes, community dinners, food security for our families, hosting cultural celebrations, and many other important events. To give you a quick background on our school, we serve 308 students in kindergarten through eighth grade, with a student population of 92% Hispanic Latino students. And 88% of Risen Christ students receive a free or reduced lunch. And 96% of our students receive tuition assistance. The average household income of a family of four at Risen Christ is $40,000. We are the only Catholic dual immersion school in the state of Minnesota, and just one of 41 in the nation. During the 2019-2020 school year, I was a first grade teacher at Risen Christ, and I saw how the pandemic greatly affected my students' social emotional well-being. Our school was also impacted by the riots and protests that erupted after the murder of George Floyd. We're located only 3 blocks from George Floyd Square, and many of our families live near the Lake Street area of Minneapolis. During the riots, our students and families lost their homes to arson, heard gunshots outside their window, and had to flee their homes to find safer refuge. Needless to say, when my first grade students returned to school in person, I saw firsthand how the trauma of the pandemic and the riots affected their mental health, and I was at a loss to be able to provide them with adequate mental health support and counseling. I ask you all to please consider supporting HF 1102, because by providing counseling and mental health services to students in the elementary grades, we are able to help provide early interventions so that when students leave St. Christ and go on to other public high schools or charter schools, we are helping them have the tools to be successful so they can receive these services at a younger age and be successful. I would like to extend my deepest gratitude to Representative Mary Frances Clarity for introducing HF 1102 and for supporting and caring about all of our children in schools across the state of Minnesota. I encourage the committee members to please support HF 1102, and thank you so much for considering and allowing me to join you today. Bendiciones.
Thank you. Mr. Straub, maybe just before we go to member questions and testimony, you can explain to us a little bit about what the aid that we do give to non-public private.
Madam Chair, committee members, there are two line items in the K-12 budget for non-public education. The first of those is for the transportation. Essentially, on their non-public pupil transportation, the average cost of transporting a student is applied for each non-public student transported. That aid is run
Mr.
through the...
Mr. Chairman, can you pull your microphone?
I'm so sorry, Madam Chair. That aid is provided to the school district for the non-public transportation services. In terms of the non-public pupil transportation aid, or the non-transportation aid, the three categories are textbooks, health, and secondary counseling. Under current law, the cost of those activities in the public schools for the second prior year are used to calculate the base level of funding for those. So those three each fall, a rate is set for textbooks, health, and counseling. There are a number of other provisions that are not direct line items, like non-public student participation in PSEO, shared time, those kinds of things. But the two line items in the budget this committee has are non-public pupil transportation and non-public pupil aids.
Thank you so much, Mr. Strom. With that, members will go to the table for questions or comments. Representative Edison.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Clardy. I'm very supportive. The reality is regardless of what school you go to, we should make sure that we're investing early to make sure that we're getting the healthcare needs met and really looking at the whole child, regardless of what school you go to. So I appreciate it. Very supportive. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Edelston. Representative Perez Vega.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Clardy, I was reacting to the testimony given by the representation from the Catholic school over in Minneapolis. I went to a Catholic school and a Lutheran school through partial scholarships or academia and sports. And I could have definitely been a great support back then to have this. And now we have flashing forward right now an opportunity to fund for kids who face discrimination, for kids who are facing the outcomes of folks talking about conversion therapy to children. These services are to be provided to all children regardless of what schools go to. Just like Representative Edelson said, this is about caring about our kids and making sure that they have accessibilities. Doesn't matter who, where, what faith you come from, what you believe in. It matters about our kids having a health ability to be able to speak with someone at their services. So thank you for this.
Thank you, Representative Perez Vega. Other member questions or comments? Representative Bennett.
Thanks, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Clardy, for bringing this forward. I think it's a very important subject. Good bill. We all know that mental health issues don't just start in high school, and we need to catch them early, so appreciate this.
Thank you. Thank you. Representative Clardy, final comments.
Well, thank you for your support. I feel that we're all here looking for healthy communities, and our kids are fluid. My daughter, in particular, she, you know, went private school, public school, and back and forth, that type of thing. And then oftentimes when we have our children out on the playground, we don't think, did you have access to mental health care? You know, or even like students that are expelled from a school system, they need to go somewhere. So they, hello, sorry. So they end up going to a school. So it's all about making a healthy community. And I would just want to thank you for understanding that that connection also goes into, you know, having a great workforce. So. Thanks.
Great. Thank you, Representative Clardy. And with that, House File 1102 is laid over for possible inclusion in an education finance bill. Next up, we have House File 347. Representative Howard.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Okay,
thank you, Representative Howard. Welcome to the Education Finance Committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Pryor, would you like to move House File 347 over for possible inclusion in an education finance bill?
So moved.
Thank you, Representative Pryor. Representative Howard, your bill's before the committee. Go ahead and proceed. Oh, you do have an amendment, too. I'm sorry about that.
Yes, Madam Chair.
Representative Pryor, would you like to also move the A5 amendment?
So moved.
Thank you, Representative Chair. I should clearly open my packets as I'm talking. Representative Howard, will you briefly explain the A5 amendment?
Yes, Madam Chair. The A5 amendment represents some technical changes to the bill brought forward in concert with our school district administrators to make sure that this bill would be implemented in the most effective way possible.
Thank you, Representative Howard. Members, does anybody have any questions on the A5 amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed say no. The A5 amendment is adopted. Representative Howard, the bill is in the shape you prefer. Why don't you go ahead and proceed?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, by the time most of our kids graduate from high school, they will have spent more than 15,000 hours at school. It's vital that we ensure that the water that they're drinking while at school is safe and free from lead. But we don't know that that's the case. And a recent study by the Environment America U.S. PIRG, which rated all states for their efforts to protect school drinking water, gave Minnesota a D. Now, a lot of states received an F, but when it comes to making sure that our school drinking water is free from lead, we shouldn't be grading on a curve. And this bill helps us move forward with the kind of evidence-based, science-based approach with support for our schools to make sure that we're doing everything we can to make sure that our school drinking water is free of lead. Minnesota established standards and best practices to test and remediate lead in 2018, and there is good work happening. But since, the availability of better health and scientific data shows us we can do better. Children are most vulnerable to lead and the damaging effects because their bodies are still developing and absorb more of the harmful metals than adults. And we know from national data that this is definitely a pervasive issue in schools. And we know that there's really no safe level at all. And so this bill does a few things. First, it sets out to strengthen our knowledge of the scope of the challenge our schools are up against. Currently, as I mentioned, schools are testing and remediating for lead, but we don't have a centralized reporting or good data to really understand the scope of this challenge. There's some national data that shows that 30-40% of schools are up against this challenge, and this bill would set out to create some better data for us as policymakers to assess what this looks like across the state. Second, we are strengthening the standard of acceptable lead in our school drinking water and moving that from 15 parts per billion to 5 parts per billion. As I mentioned, there's no safe level, but there is evidence that of damage at that above 5 level, and as a frame of reference, 5 parts per billion lead is the 5 parts per billion and below is what's acceptable in bottled drinking water. And so that's the standard we'd be setting for our school drinking water here. Third, if we're going to be asking our school districts to be doing this remediation, we believe it's important to compensate those school districts and make sure that they have the resources they need to do that. So we provide a funding mechanism for our districts to complete remediation. I really want to thank MDH, MDE, and the school districts for their collaboration over more than a year on this bill to make sure that we're seeing this from all angles and implementing something that is workable from the school district's perspective and ultimately gets us to where we want to get, which is safer drinking water for all of our schools all across the state. It's a really strong bill, and I would hope that we could have bipartisan support for it. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Howard. With that, we have some testifiers. We have Dr. Kim Heil from Fridley Public Schools on remote. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Yes, hi, good morning. I am Dr. Kim Heil, and thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. I am Dr. Kim Heil, the Proud Superintendent at Fridley Public Schools. Along with being a current superintendent, I have served in the education field for approximately 20 years, and I has also served in the role of principal and teacher. I appreciate the chance to speak with you today in regards to the impact on lead on student learning and how in ensuring our student safety from lead, its impact on our school district budget. First, I would like to state, as we all know, lead has many health effects, including negative impacts on intellectual development. Even when exposed to small amounts of lead, children may appear inattentive, hyperactive, and irritable. Children with greater lead levels may also have problems with learning and reading, delayed growth, and even hearing loss. According to CDC, the health effects of lead exposure are more harmful to younger children than older children and adults because their bodies are still developing and they are growing so rapidly. As such, it is important that we protect our children to exposure to this toxic neurochemical. By reducing the action and remediation level to 5 parts per billion is an important step towards avoiding the worst consequences of lead exposure. A crucial part of making this happen is to ensure school districts receive funding from the state. While Fridley Public Schools have made progress in addressing lead in water by replacing old pipes with copper piping, it has been accomplished through the use of local district dollars. Funding for this project was used from the district's health and safety budget, which in turn took funding from other important and necessary areas in the district. So improving the quality of drinking water for our children should not come at the expense of supporting their health and safety in other important ways. Provided the needed funding for lead remediation will take the burden off of school budgets to address this important issue. Thank you for taking this opportunity and allowing me to speak to you today.
Thank you so much, Dr. Heil. Next testifier, please state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Josh Dunham, Minneapolis Public Schools, and I'm here today to testify also on behalf of the entire alphabet soup of education organizations. And Madam Chair, I'm excited to have my citywide student government folks here today for one other lesson that they can learn, that when there's a meeting where they're handing out responsibilities, you should attend that meeting, because if you don't attend it, you end up testifying on issues like lead in drinking water. So, Madam Chair, I'm actually very appreciative of Representative Howard's work on this bill. We have been working on this now for 2 years, and this is a dramatic improvement. Lowering the standard from 20 parts per billion to 5 parts per billion is going to be a big lift for school districts, but it's the right thing to do. And we need to have the resources to do that, and appreciate what Representative Howard has included in here. Right now, members, the standard for your local municipal water systems is 15 parts per billion. So this goes beyond what our municipal water supplies are going to be providing. However, most water supplies actually are below that 15 parts per billion. And through things like flushing, schools are able to meet that 5 parts per billion standard so that students aren't exposed to it. And I think the bill has been improved in many ways, and including ensuring that schools will have a say in how this data is reported back to the state so that it isn't an additional burden on schools. So Madam Chair, I appreciate this. We support this and look forward to working with it in the omnibus bill. Thanks, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Dunham. With that, members, we'll go to the table for questions or comments. Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. To the last testifier, I'm just curious, what is flushing? And maybe you can, I mean, I support, obviously, this is great. I'm wondering, I don't know much about water systems and so on, and I'm wondering, how do you get, if an average municipal system, I don't know if average, but is 15 parts, how do you get to 5 if you're on city water? And you talked about flushing, so maybe you can
Mr. Dunham.
Educate us. Thank you.
Sure. Okay. Mr. Dunham, Representative Howard, I know that you know this well, too.
Sure. I'll take a stab. I'll let Mr. Dunham answer as well. There was a lot of conversation about trying to make sure that we're understanding the interactions between the municipal and the school district level. The issue of the water coming in the school districts, as Mr. Donner mentioned, most of those municipalities are bringing water in that is less than that standard. They're larger pipes. When we think of the notion of lead service lines, which Representative Jordan could probably spend the rest of the committee hearing talking to us about, that's where you end up with, I think, some of those higher levels. And I'm not sure that might be partly why you see a higher standard, that 15 parts per billion. Often it's not a lead service line, it's the pipe that's into the school. Separate from that is the issue of flushing. I think in a perfect world, the kind of remediation we're talking about is kind of, it isn't the lines itself, it's often like plumbing fixtures and things where the lead is present. But the issue with flushing is sometimes if let's say there's kind of water sitting in a system over the weekend for multiple days, you can lower a level by sort of running the water through the lines, and that's what the term flushing, I think, refers to.
Mr. Dunham, do you have anything else to add?
Yeah, Madam Chair, Representative Anderson. Flushing is simply the practice in the morning before students arrive, is they actually have devices that turn on all the water systems and let the water that's been sitting in those pipes flush out so that there's fresh water in the system, so it hasn't had chance to be sitting in those pipes for any length of time. And the bill actually allows that if a school district is receiving water from a municipality above that 5 parts per billion, they wouldn't be responsible for remediating it. They would have to work with and, you know, notify the local municipal system that they're now above the 5 part standard, but that local school district would not be on the hook for remediating that because it's, again, it's beyond their authority.
Thank you, Representative Anderson. Any follow-up? That was a good question. It's also a good reminder for folks, like if you're gone for a long period of time from your house, make sure you run your water a little bit before you, like, take a shower, because you could also contract Legionnaire's disease, because that when that water sits and the bacteria grows, if it sits in lead. Public service announcement. There we go. Representative Green.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And thank you, Representative Howard, for bringing this bill forward. I first heard about the problem with lead in our drinking water in our schools from now Supreme Court Justice Paul Thiessen when he went around the state. And I was really surprised. You know, I grew up in Ridgefield, a district you represent, and Paul Thiessen was one of my classmates. But I've always thought our water was exceptional. And so I was really surprised to hear that we have lead in our school water. And I think, once again, to repeat myself, when we look back on, you know, what we've done here, you know, what we've prioritized and what we've put resources into when we have, you know, extra money to put resources into, getting lead out of the water, you know, making sure that our kids and our schools have clean drinking water, that's something I think that we need to prioritize, and I really appreciate you bringing this forward. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Representative Jordan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Howard, for bringing this forward. There are limitations when it comes to flushing, so you need to make sure that you're flushing your system for at least 10 minutes and using cold water to actually get the lead out. There's been extensive research on this in the state of New Jersey, and even in that case, they found that lead had started to accumulate by lunch when they had flushed those pipes first thing in the morning. So I'm glad that you're bringing a bill forward to actually address the infrastructure itself. And so I do have a question, though, and it is there any safe amount of exposure to lead for any human?
Representative Howard.
Chair Youakim, Representative Jordan, there is not. There is no safe level. That's why something like this is so important, especially when you consider the impacts that lead has on our kids.
Thank you, Representative Jordan. Follow up.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just one final thing is lead is much more harmful in children, and it does accumulate. And while we can work to make sure that the accumulation of lead in a child's body or a human's body can go down over time, the damage it does to our health is permanent. So thank you for taking action on this to make sure that our children are safe.
Thank you, Representative Jordan. Thank you for also being a champion on this too, Representative Fidella.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Great bill. Curious on it. So my district, PFAS is a big issue, right? And I'm just curious, whatever mitigation mechanism schools are going to use to mitigate the lead, will that also mitigate PFAS? And if not, I would just encourage you in working with the schools, if it means, hey, instead of using mitigation piece A, we can look at mitigation piece B and change a few things and mitigate PFAS at the same time. I would really encourage you to do it just because it's become such an issue in our communities, not only in the metro, but around the state and around certain types of industry.
Chair Kuhn, Representative Hidalgo, good question. I am not familiar with if sort of the exact level of sort of plumbing fixture issues would address it. My guess is potentially not, although the funding source that we're having, I think, may be useful in that same vein. I'm not sure if Mr. Donham knows.
I think Representative Jordan.
Looks like our water expert here has got some. I'll phone a friend to Representative Jordan.
Phoning a friend is perfectly allowed, Representative Jordan.
And I will say thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Howard. And I am a co-author of this bill. So the lead that is accumulating in our water is coming from the infrastructure itself. PFAS is coming from the water. And so the PFAS gets in the water. The lead is coming from the infrastructure. And so what Representative Howard is doing is really helpful for mitigating lead in our schools, but it won't help with the PFAS accumulation because that's coming from outside sources. So, for example, you represent the East Metro. That has come from spills, from leaching, from dumps, from other sources of water. So they're two very separate issues. And so while what Representative Howard is doing, this infrastructure changes won't really help with PFAS, and that really requires more systematic changes about preventing PFAS and other forever chemicals from getting into our drinking water and our groundwater sources to begin with, less about how we transport the water from its source to our cups and to our taps. And so they really are two separate problems, but they really do have very similar devastating effects on health, especially that of children. I know we've seen cancer clusters in places like Tartan High in the East Metro, and so it certainly is a problem that requires a lot of attention. And so I would recommend that people look into the PFAS bills as well, because these are both very huge problems that impact our health and our ability to, there's neurological effects as well that can impact learning. So while Representative Howard's bill is great, there's a lot more we need to do to make sure that we have clean drinking water for all Minnesotans.
Thank you, Representative Jordan. It's fascinating what we all become experts in through our work up here. Representative Fidella, follow-up comment.
Thanks, Madam Chair, and thanks, Representative Jordan. Yeah, just didn't understand, hey, we're going to hook an RO unit to schools now, and that takes care of it. Sounds like it's more of a fixture and piping issue within the schools. So thanks for the clarification.
Thank you. No problem. We always learn something new. We're the education committee, right? We're lifelong learners. I learn something new from you as well, and every time I hear all of you speak, so that's fantastic. With that, members, are there any other questions? Seeing none, Representative Howard, final comments.
Chair Youakim, members, I just really appreciate the discussion. And Representative Fidel, I look forward to talking more offline and figuring out if there's ways to, through other bills or otherwise, look at this issue, because I think ultimately the point is that our water should be safe for our kids, and that's what this bill does, and I think this approach is a way to make improvements we can all get behind. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Howard. And with that, I will lay over House File 347 as amended for possible inclusion in the education finance bill. And members, we may be getting back 15 minutes of our day for a change, which is wonderful because, as a reminder, we are meeting tomorrow at 10 a.m., at 10:30, 10 a.m. in the State Office Building, 200. So we will see you at 10 a.m. tomorrow, State Office Building 200. With that, we are adjourned.